Hi, this is Tabitha Grace Smith from Buffy Between the Lines and a slew of other podcasts. You can find them all at tabithagracesmith.com. But right now, you're listening to episode 17 of Murder at Avedon Hill with PG Holyfield.
Welcome to the podcast presentation of Murder at Avedon Hill, The Chronicles of Aramis Cragan, written and produced by P.G. Holyfield. Hey everybody, and welcome back to episode 17 of Murder at Avedon Hill. This will be a longer episode, as this chapter isn't quite long enough to break into two separate episodes. And as a result, I won't be chatting much other than to shout out my normal thank yous. Thanks once again to those of you that have written reviews on iTunes and over at patiobooks.com. The reviews seem to be helping, as Murder at Avedon Hill is now one of the featured podcasts in the iTunes Literature Store. There are links on the left nav bar at pgholyfield.com to Patio Books and to Podcast Pickle and several other places where you can rate and review Murder at Avedon Hill. If you have a few minutes to do this, I'd really appreciate it. For those of you interested in the print version of Murder at Avedon Hill, it is now available at lulu.com. You can do a search on PG Holyfield at Lulu, or the direct link to the novel will be in this episode's show notes. It will be a few weeks before the book gets over to Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com, and I'll let you know when that happens. This week we have several guest voices. My friend Matt Lynch returns as Hemming the Baker. Indiana Jim makes his third appearance as Richard Avedon. Fresh off her tremendously successful first season of Space Casey, Christiana Ellis is back as Marissa, the town herbalist. Danny Cutler, host of the Truth Seekers podcast, returns as the baker's daughter, Jilly Hemming. And last, we have Glenn Weber, back as the young John Avedon. Well, that's it for now. Be sure to call the Karen line if you have any questions or comments. I'm planning on a listener episode after episode 19, so let me know what you think of the novel so far. The voicemail number is 704-315-5884. And to let you guys know, apparently I'm really big in Australia. So since we've had a few episodes of split chapters, I'm going to change things up, and in this episode I'm going to do a story so far. After that, we have Rick Stringer returning to do the chapter intro. Enjoy the episode, and I'll see you next time. The story so far. Aramis Cragan and Aaron Pertee have been asked to investigate the murder of Lord Avedon's housemistress Greta Platt. Most believe that Greta was murdered by a vampire, and Greta's corpse is now missing. At the end of a long day, Aaron discovers that he has inherited his family's legacy of dreamwalking. Later that night, Aramis and Father Joris hunt several primitive vampires in the forests outside of town. The next morning, Aramis spends some time at Avedon Manor, attempting to learn more about Greta's position as housemistress. During this time, Aaron remains in town, and with Cletus's help, discovers some interesting links between Greta and Hemming, the town baker. And now, episode 17. Of Murder at Avedon Hill.
Chapter 15, A Baker's Dozen. The Icon of Doppin, Child of Trickery. Shem, why do I love so many women?
Because humanity is Doppin's plaything.
Ah, and Lem said you'd never learn. Balak's Poe, a comic play about an avatar of Doppin.
Aramis continued to the inn and his rendezvous with Aaron. He looked forward to sitting down to a good lunch, even though it was only a psych after worship bells. At the very young age of 26, Aramis Cragen resigned from his position as Aronic advisor to Prince Wren of the province of Yu. There were several reasons for this, the primary being what he referred to as the call of the land. Aramis spent the next 4 years in seclusion on a small patch of isolated swampland in southeastern Yu. During these years of ascetic study and meditation, Aramis became even more attuned to the needs of the land. Aramis's abilities, gained initially through his training as a member of the Aronic Brotherhood, became even more powerful during this time. But Aramis's connection to the land had its drawbacks as well. Simply put, Aramis became very weak if he did not eat something seemingly every hour he was awake. As with everything in Cairn, what the land gives, the land also takes away. Aramis found it ironic that he could feel the ebbs and flows of the land better than most, yet he was required to take from the land more often simply to function. Aramis spotted Aaron in the distance. Aaron's pace and demeanor told Aramis all he needed to know. Lunch was not going to go exactly as planned. Aaron related what he had discovered, that Hemming, the baker, most likely had an affair with Greta Platt during the months prior to her death. He explained how Hemming's trips to Elyon had increased in frequency and coincided on days that Greta took excursions outside of town, and described how Hemming had reacted to the suggestion that he had been involved with Greta. Aramis, in turn, shared what he had found in Greta's office and related Lee Nallon's story concerning a heated argument between Herjar and Greta. Aaron was not surprised to learn that Talik Bor had worn out his welcome at Avedon Manor. After further discussion, Aramis retrieved a pear from Aaron's backpack and began cutting it into small pieces. "Well, Aaron, it looks like lunch will have to wait. I was so looking forward to see what Talik is doing with Olviarn Whitetail today." Richard Avedon, oldest son of Lord Avedon, watched Aramis and Aaron from the corner of the herbalist's shop. He could not make out what they were saying, but that didn't matter. He just wanted to make sure they didn't see him. Richard waited until they had moved out of view to the north, towards the center of town. Once he was sure he wouldn't be seen, Richard entered Marissa's shop. It only took him 4 long strides to reach the top platform where Marissa was hard at work. She nearly dropped the glass she held when Richard appeared before her.
"Are you done yet?"
Richard's voice dripped with the threat of violence. She steadied a glass filled with a bluish liquid and carefully set it on the workbench.
"Boy, you had better watch yourself. You almost ruined any chance to save..."
Richard interrupted her by slamming his hand on the workbench.
"Don't be so theatrical, Marissa. I only need to know when you will be done."
Marissa wanted to say a great many things to the future Lord Avedon, but she controlled herself.
"Tomorrow, at the earliest. But most likely it will be the day after that. While that monk helped us by finding a King's Head caterpillar, I am doing my best to subvert the laws of nature to force the caterpillar to transform into a King's Head moth without killing it in the process."
Richard Avedon glared down at Marissa. She looked as if she hadn't slept for days.
"For your sake, potion maker, you'd better deliver on your promise before sundown tomorrow."
He pointed a finger as if to emphasize his threat. The oldest son of Lord Avedon then turned on his heel and stormed out of the shop. Aaron and Aramis continued on their path towards the shops at the center of town. Aaron didn't ask about their destination. He figured he would find out when they got there. You know, I don't know how you do it, Aramis. Hmm? Cletus, from the moment we arrived here, you seemed to like him, even though he is probably the most rude and insulting person I have ever met. And it's just he ended up helping me connect the threads. The threads that convinced me that Hemming was having an affair with Greta. Aramis smiled. You were polite, and he was polite and kind, correct? Yes. There is something you need to understand about Cletus. He is more than he appears, and he has been testing you ever since we arrived here. While he is definitely rude and insulting, I believe he is far more intelligent than most give him credit for. Do you think he will continue to help us? Aramis nodded. Yes, I believe so, as long as it remains in his best interests. I don't know whom Cletus serves, but it is most likely himself. You use the term like. While I do respect Cletus, I do not trust him. Keep that in mind, young Aaron. They slowed their pace once the bakery came into view. Approaching the shop from the other side of the road was a young woman around Aaron's age. Sandy blonde hair, reddish-green eyes, and with the face of Dally Hemming, only younger. His hunger temporarily abated. Aramis hurried to intercept the woman before she entered the bakery's front door. Good morning, young lady. Why, you must be Jilly, are you not? Aaron had never seen his friend and mentor act so happy. It caught him and Jilly a bit off guard.
Yes. Yes, sir.
Her eyes lit as she recognized Aaron.
You're the man from the bakery. You were going to find out who killed my friend Greta, aren't you?
That is the plan, yes. His broad smile nearly scared Aaron, only used to Aramis's knowing smirk. From the look on Jilly's face, it might be scaring her as well. I was wondering if you had a little time to speak with us. Jilly looked down at her empty basket.
I don't think I have any more deliveries to make today, but I should check in with my mother first.
Aramis had purposely placed himself between Jilly and the bakery door. No need for that. It will only take a moment. Your parents will understand. They have been most helpful, and I am sure they would want you to help us any way you can. Jilly was still unsure about Aramis, but she allowed herself to be ushered towards a bench in front of Kaj's butcher shop.
Of course I want to help. Greta was my best friend in the world.
The smile never left Aramis's face. Very good. Now, since you were such good friends with Greta, I was wondering if you knew anyone that wanted to hurt her. Jilly Hemming stared at the ground.
No, I've been thinking about that since I heard. Why would anyone want to hurt Greta? I haven't been able to think of anyone.
While it didn't appear that Jilly was lying, Aramis felt anger behind her words. He couldn't tell if she was angry about not being able to think of anyone, or if it was something more. No one. You and Greta were close. She must have confided in you over the years about people she did not like, and those she had trouble with as house mistress. Jilly raised her head until she faced Aramis. From the shadows behind Jilly, Aramis surmised that the sun must have cleared the edge of some clouds. Jilly's eyes gleamed in the sunlight.
It's not that, Sir Aramis. I just shouldn't say. I'm probably wrong. I don't want to get anyone in trouble.
Please. Any information you have will be helpful. We are not going to accuse anyone of anything until we have proof. What you tell us will remain with us, unless the person actually did something wrong. Jilly nodded.
Richard and Edward Avedon, they were both in love with Greta. She wouldn't have anything to do with them. Edward was too young, and Richard will be the next Lord Avedon, and a housemistress has never, would never.
Aramis let Jilly's words hang in the air. He finally asked, was she forced to do anything about this? Did she rebuff their advances? Jilly shook her head.
Edward just had a crush on her. I think Greta sat him down and explained things to him. But no is a word that Richard Avedon doesn't hear, or like very much. I think she had to go to Richard's father about it, and that didn't sit well with Richard.
Interesting. What about you? Jilly seemed embarrassed by the question.
What do you mean?
Has Richard Avedon made any advances towards you. The muscles around Jilly's eyes relaxed, but the anger remained in her voice.
He wouldn't dare. He knew I hated him after how he acted towards Greta, and that I wouldn't have anything to do with him.
Are you interested in anyone here in town? I know at least one person that thinks the world of you.
Is Shane talking about me again? I don't know how many times I've told him to quit fawning over me.
Aramis noted that the anger had left Jilly's voice. Aaron asked, You don't ever see yourself feeling the same way about him? Jilly licked her lips, not provocatively, but as a point of emphasis.
No.
Neither Aramis nor Aaron required further explanation on that topic. We need to ask you more about your friendship with Greta. You knew Greta since you were both children.
Yes. She began visiting her mother during the winter season when she was 6. I am a year younger, and we began playing together at a young age. We were always friends, but when she moved here to take over her mother's duties as housemistress of Avedon Manor, we became even closer.
Jilly had a wistful look.
Greta grew up in the world, Sir Aramis. I have spent my whole life here. My father has taken me to Elyon twice. Twice. But when I was 12, I was allowed to travel with Greta and her mother to see Thorn's Way. I even got to see your Brotherhood's Academy. At least from the outside. But that's it. Most of my life, I have only heard about the world from the stories Greta told me when she visited. She traveled all around you and even into Graz and Inara. It was all part of her education. And when she moved here permanently, I got to hear even more about how wonderful and dangerous and beautiful the world is. Have you ever seen the smoke billowing out of the Great Rift?
Jilly referred to the legendary rift in Inara, a volcano that was rumored to lead directly to Callan's Abyss. Little did Jilly Hemming know how important the area around the Great Rift truly was, or would ever know. Aramis nodded and then moved on to the reason for his questions. From what people have told us, your relationship with Greta changed over the last half year or so. Jilly's face, especially around her eyes, revealed her emotions. Her brow furrowed, and Aramis saw a line cross Jilly's forehead. She was not happy, but she did her best to mask it in her voice.
Greta became so busy with her work, I knew the day would come. Her mother even warned me once that it would happen. But it still hurt when she told me that we could no longer go on picnics together, that she had to use that time to work.
And you were not welcomed as warmly at the manor after that?
No, I was always welcome at the manor, but Greta couldn't spend time with me, and once Greta turned Richard down, he loved trying to get to Greta through me. Eventually, I just stopped going to the manor.
Aramis made eye contact with Aaron, making sure he understood where he was leading Jilly before he continued. Jilly, we have good reason to believe that Greta Platt was having an affair with someone here at Avedon Hill. Jilly Hemming's eyes moved back and forth between Aramis and Aaron. She was dumbfounded.
What? That's not possible.
We believe it was not only possible, but that it happened. Jilly stood.
But she had no time for something like that. She never had visitors at her home at night.
Aramis didn't stop Jilly to ask how she knew Greta had no evening guests. He didn't want to interrupt.
And no one was meeting her outside of town. Unless it was John. But John Avedon is only 13 years old. Greta wouldn't do that.
Aramis focused on Jilly's eyes, wanting to gauge her next reaction. What about your father? Jilly's mouth fell open. Aramis remained silent and watched as Jilly put the pieces together.
My father? The only time he leaves town is to go to Elyon. There isn't... he wouldn't...
Aramis continued studying Jilly's face, not needing to use his ironic abilities to read the girl's emotions. The increasing number of trips to Elyon, that Hemming returned to town much later in the day once she had stopped going on picnics with Greta. These facts were sinking in, without the need for Aramis to speak them aloud. The tension in the air was palpable. It reminded Aramis of the buildup of pressure in a pot of water as it came to a boil. Tears began streaming down Jilly's face, and she clenched her hands against her side. Aramis felt pulses of emotion emanating from Jilly, waves of heat passing through him. Aramis stood and placed his hand on Jilly's arm. You do not have to worry, Jilly. I believe they broke it off months before Greta. Jilly would not be calmed with words. She exploded.
You know nothing. It didn't happen. You've got it wrong. Greta wouldn't. My father wouldn't. My father and mother love each other.
Jilly picked up the basket she had dropped and stormed off towards the bakery. They watched as Jilly stopped under the awning, collected herself, and then walked through the door. She looked back one more time before the door closed. Her face was calm now, tears wiped away, but her eyes held a hatred and fire that Aramis could feel even from where he stood. The door closed, and Aramis and Aaron were left on the empty streets of Abaddon Hill. Aramis took Aaron by the arm and directed him down the path heading east. Aaron commented, "Well, that went well, don't you think?" Aramis smiled. "Actually, it did. Do you think she is going to talk to her parents about what just happened?" Aramis continued east towards the inn. "Oh, I think not." Aaron understood why Aramis did not say more. As with most conversations between them, this was a test for Aaron. What should I have learned from Jilly's reactions and words? But instead of commenting on Jilly, Aaron asked the question. Why didn't you ask Jilly about the burning dolls incident? Aramis changed direction slightly so they were heading back towards the stables. I did not have to. We will save John Avedon's description of her behavior for another time. I did not want to push her too far. Oh no, you wouldn't want to do that. Aaron rolled his eyes. Well, at least it is obvious why Greta stopped having lunches with Jilly. Is it? Well, Greta began having an affair with Jilly's father. The time she usually spent with Jilly was being spent with Hemming. True, but like most things, there is more than one reason why Greta might have stopped seeing Jilly. Do not assume anything. The two men found themselves approaching John Avedon, who was leading a horse down a path away from the stables. John Avedon smiled when he recognized the two men. He approached and looped the reins of his horse on the low branch of a nearby tree. Even though Aramis would never own a horse again, he knew horses. John's horse would have remained in place even if it wasn't bridled. Lord Avedon's youngest son grabbed Aramis by the hand and shook it fervently.
Good morning, gents. How goes the investigation?
He leaned in, conspiratorially.
Any suspects yet?
It is too early to say, John. They exchanged pleasantries for a time. John had a good laugh at his father's reaction to events from the evening before.
Dad loves us very much, even if he is a bit overprotective at times. I think that my interest in horses has lessened his attention to my well-being. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I just think he knows I'm well, and that I will have a life, even though I have no desire to become the next Lord Avedon.
We still have not been able to meet your brother, Edvard, or your youngest sister, Julienne. John's face lost its smile for the first time either one of them had seen.
Edvard has been ill, I'm afraid. Richard told me he isn't getting better as fast as he usually does. Hopefully he will be able to have visitors soon.
You don't see him when he's sick?
Not this time. I am preparing for a competition in tax, and have not spent much time in the manor these last 2 weeks. I usually do, see him that is, but Richard and Karen have decided it would be best if us young'uns stay away from Edvard. Julienne is having a hard time of it, being that Edvard is her favorite.
What does Julienne like to do? Does she have interests like you?
Yes, she actually wants to travel to Thorn's Way. She wants to join the priests of Cairn.
Aramis was genuinely surprised. While some temples to the Children of Aj welcome or even encourage female clerics, such as the sisterhoods of Aruna and Kaylee, the priests of Cairn never accepted female acolytes. I would love the opportunity to talk to her about that. But right now, I have an important matter to discuss with you.
This doesn't sound good.
When we first met, you told us about your rides outside the town walls and seeing Greta.
I believe what I said was that I sometimes saw her horse, Firefly. I know she had some sort of clearing where she spent time, but I never actually saw her.
And that is how you could deny seeing anyone meet her out there.
Okay, I see where this is going. Let's skip the small talk. What do you have on Hemming?
Aramis was not used to being surprised twice in the same conversation. He realized he was going to have to reassess his opinion concerning intelligence within the Avedon family. He explained a little about what they had learned, and John helped them fill in the blanks.
My apologies, Sir Aramis. I didn't want to say anything until you had evidence yourself. I don't like speaking ill of anyone, especially without proof. On several occasions I saw Hemming's cart off of the main road near where Greta spent her afternoons. I never saw them together, but I can tell you one thing for sure. The road to Elyon is nowhere near Greta's grove. This ended probably 3 or 4 months ago. After that, I never saw Hemming's wagon anywhere near the area.
Aramis didn't say anything for a moment. Still not proof of the act, but certainly enough to take to Hemming himself. Thank you, John. At some point, we might need you to take us to that clearing, to see if Greta might have left anything there before she was killed. John grabbed the reins of his horse and began walking towards the town gate.
If you ever need me, I am at your service, Sir Aramis.
A short time later, Aramis entered the bakery. Hemming was less than happy to see him. Aramis spoke before Hemming could say anything. We should go outside, unless you want your wife to hear what I have to say. Hemming sighed, appearing somewhat defeated.
Wait a moment.
He walked into the back room and told his wife Dally he had to step outside. Aramis led Hemming out of the shop. Aaron sat on the nearby bench where they had earlier questioned Jilly. Aramis spied Kaj standing at the door of his butcher shop. He flashed a hand signal to Aaron. Aaron stood and walked over to Kaj. He started a conversation about the best hunting areas around Avedon Hill. Once he was sure Kaj wasn't watching, Aramis turned his attention back to the baker. You had an affair with Greta Platt. Do not deny it, for I do not care to hear it. She or you called it off several months ago. I want to know who did this and why. Anger had returned to Hemming's face, but he did not protest the accusation.
I would like to be able to say I stopped it, but it was her decision. I loved Greta. I wouldn't hurt a hair on her head, Monk. You've got to believe me.
Hemming didn't raise his voice. He was just stating a fact, and Aramis believed him.
She called it off, stating the obvious. I'm married, and too old for her. She would never marry anyone from Avedon Hill, even if I left my Dally. She was the most beautiful...
Hemming's voice broke. Hemming, I believe you, but you've got to be honest with me from now on. The baker began nodding and talking at the same time.
Yes, yes, I promise. Besides, I can prove I didn't kill Greta. I was with my wife and Father Livesdon. We had dinner at his home the night Greta was killed.
Was Jilly with you? Hemming began to answer, but then stopped. Aramis repeated the question. Was your daughter with you at Father Livesdon's home? Hemming reached out, but before he could touch Aramis, the monk shifted his weight to the right. Hemming missed Aramis's arm and found himself off balance. Before Hemming could regain his footing, Aramis grabbed the baker's arm tightly and moved in with his left hip, keeping the baker off balance, unable to move without the threat of falling. Hemming was completely at Aramis's mercy, but his anger had not abated.
My daughter was Greta's friend. You were looking in the wrong place, monk. Greta was killed by a vampire, you know that.
Hemming was a large man, but Aramis's leverage and balance offset most of the baker's weight. I know nothing of the sort, Master Hemming. What I do know is that I have been lied to for over a day now, and I am beginning to tire of it. The only thing that has become clear to me is that no one is as innocent as they would like me to believe. I am trying to clear everyone I can, including your daughter. If she was not with you when Greta was murdered, she had to be somewhere. If your daughter had nothing to do with Greta's murder, then you have nothing to worry about. Aramis pulled Hemming up until he had his feet underneath him again. Aramis looked down the path past Hemming and saw Constable Lewis had entered the town circle and had stopped, just watching them. He was far enough away that he could not have overheard their conversation. Does your wife know about the affair?
No.
Well, keep it that way. That is a pain she does not deserve. With that, Aramis turned and walked away. Constable Lewis simply smiled and headed off in the opposite direction. Aramis moved to the butcher shop, hoping that Kaj might have something to sample. No matter what, a meal was the next thing on Aramis's list.
2 years ago, a voice whispered from the edge a story about the Weaver's Web. Now, that voice speaks again.
Koru Studios, in association with Dragon Moon Press, presents Chasing the Bard, written and read by Philippa Ballantyne.
Coming soon. www.chasingthebard.com.
Hey everybody, J.C. Hutchins here. You probably know me from the Seventh Son Trilogy, the most popular podcast novel series in history. But what you may not know is that I've launched a brand new show at my site, jchutchins.net. It's called the Ultra Creatives Interview Series. I'm chatting with some of the coolest, most brilliant writers, artists, film directors, and entrepreneurs in the social media scene, and you're gonna love it. Now, this ain't hardcore 60-minute style reporting, guys. I get ultra-creative personalities to unwind, take it easy, and talk about their worldview and their work. We're only a few episodes in right now, but I've already interviewed film director Patrick Lussier and screenwriter Matt Vain, award-winning rising star author Matt Wallace, Jeff Pulver, co-founder of Vonage and creator of Pulver TV, and Mer Lafferty, a trailblazing podcaster and author. Future guests include entrepreneur and Mahalo.com founder Jason Calacanis and professional blogger Laurel from laurel.wordpress.com. This is content you cannot miss, folks, and you're never going to know who's going to show up next. So if you're hungry to listen to some kicked-back, casual conversations with some of the most creative players on the net, check out my new Ultra Creatives interview series at jchutchins.net.
You've been listening to Murder at Avedon Hill, a podcast novel written and produced by P.G. Holyfield. Please visit pgholyfield.com for more information on this novel and the author. Most of the music in this podcast generously provided by Shira Common through Magnatune.com. Magnatune.com, they are not evil. Additional music generously provided by Kevin MacLeod through his website at incompetech.com. Be sure to check out Murder at Avedon Hill at podiobooks.com, and if you are so inclined, please post a review at iTunes, at Podcast Pickle, or at podiobooks.com. Audio comments about the podcast can be left on the Cairn line at 704-315-5884. Or go to pgholyfield.com and click on the Call Me button to leave comments. This podcast is copyright 2007-2008 by P.G. Holyfield and is released under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivative Works 3.0 U.S. license.